We want to thank y'all for tuning in to Run Up the Numbers.
Every Monday at 8 a.m., and if you missed us in the morning, you can catch the replay in the afternoon at 2 p.m. and again at 8. You can also check out the shows archived over at thenumbers.fm. And for you early risers, every Monday morning at 6 a.m. on 107.1 X-Ray FM.
Make sure you're following us on all social media because we out here.
Yes.
Twitter, Facebook, Instagram,
yes.
House Party,
yes.
YouTube,
there.
Twitch, Black Planet. I know y'all talking about our OnlyFans. It's going crazy in there. MySpace, Tinder, catch us ticking on the TikTok and Google Plus.
In this episode, we'll be putting you up on a judge ordering Ethan Crumbly to stay in jail until his trial. Settlement from Precision Cast Parts air pollution case could average around $3,500 per household in parts of Southeast Portland.
And we'll be discussing State Bill 1510. And March 12th is the new date for Oregon to lift indoor school masking requirements.
Well, let's get right into it.
Yay. Yeah,
State Bill 1510 is now set to become law in Oregon.
Okay, sir. I am not up on the state bills. I'm not up on the house bills. I'm a little behind on my personal bills. If you could, you know, for all of our benefits, what exactly is happening here?
All right. Well, for one, there's short session and long session. We are okay. In the short session this year. So every odd year is long. Every even year is short. What we did with this short year was something huge.
Okay.
We got such a big bill passed in the short session. Typically doesn't happen. Managed to do in about 6 weeks, but typically would take 12 or so.
Y'all got some inside people? Y'all pay some people off? Is this
nah, you know, okay. We didn't have the people power. We didn't, okay. Not big money, but the community behind us.
Nice.
Made
nice.
These things happen.
Okay.
People like, we called the state bill SB 1510, the Transforming Justice 2022 bill. And this was a iteration of last year. We talked about House Bill 2002,
mm-hmm.
which did not unfortunately make it past the finish line in the last legislative session.
Mm-hmm.
This was our comeback to push it over that line.
Okay. To refresh people's memory, what were some of the issues that you think why that bill you were working on last year didn't pass?
Measure 11.
Okay. Okay.
Measure 11 is one of those spots, which we have to remember that as much as Portland, Oregon is, you know, painted as very progressive, mm-hmm. the rest of Oregon, not that. So when Measure 11 pops up, that's typically a space that people don't want to touch.
Okay.
And you've got to have, you know, legislators behind this, and you've got people who may agree with changing these mandatory minimum sentences, but they also want to make sure that they have a seat in the next election season. So
got you.
You know,
got you.
A little bit of trickery. But what we were able to do, what is being done, because this is becoming law now, there's three key points. So the idea was making safe for communities of color across Oregon. So now officers must notify a person of their right to decline a search and get written or recorded consent before conducting a search during pullovers.
Wow.
And that's the thing.
Huge.
Yes. Could yes. Be. Letting people know, because there's this idea I think that a lot of people have that once they ask, you saying no somehow sets you up for an issue.
Yeah. I'm going to be laying on the hood with my arms behind my back.
Yes.
Yeah. I ain't ready for that.
And then reducing public safety stops by making a broken headlight, a single broken headlight, tail light, or brake light, or license plate light a secondary offense, meaning that an officer can issue a citation only if a driver is pulled over for something else.
So you can't get pulled over for those.
Yeah, those can't be the primary reason.
Wow.
Okay. And then we jump into the supervision bullet point. Parole, probation. So it requires community corrections to create rules in consultation with people on or formerly on supervision that promote the success of people on supervision. And those rules would be preventing unnecessary workplace visits by parole and probation officers. So limiting the amount of people showing up in uniform and guns on hips to do a random check-in, which is making the spot hot for people who are trying to have a job without the spot being hot.
Right.
And then also enabling some people on parole and probation to report remotely. So it removes that barrier of having to take a day off of work or having to come out of pocket to make it from this side of town to this side of town to show up for a meeting.
Wow.
So this being able to chime in, we've learned, if nothing else, in these last couple of years, all the things can be done through Zoom.
Right.
Somebody can pop in and do it remotely. Court was being held through remote or streaming over the interweb. So why not be able to check in? So now that's a thing. And then this is where the community investments kick in. They're creating the Justice Reinvestment Equity Program with $10 million to fund investments in culturally specific services that are promote racial equity, address racial disparities prevalent in Oregon's criminal justice system, and reduce prison use. Because if there are things that are set up that are meant to actually heal the community,
right,
prison shouldn't be the first stop.
Right.
So that's what that is. Using local nonprofit foundation with existing ties to communities of color as part of the programmatic and technical experience of the grantees, and extends the 2023 sunset to the Justice Reinvestment Program for an extra year. So we got some community aspects. The parole and probation part is huge. I think, again, why that one stands out to me is the idea of when you're trying to get back into the mix, for when it's already hard enough having to check that you have priors on a job form. So once you're in a space, most people aren't walking around like, hey, I was in prison. Hey, I did that. You know what I mean?
Trying to
get their life back on track. And when you have somebody showing up to check on you, people in the workplace, that spreads pretty fast.
Oh, yeah.
Why is this parole officer, probation, or this officer showing up to talk to you?
It can turn your workplace into a hostile work environment.
Exacto mundo.
Yeah.
And that's what we've been up against. So, you know, that kind of being in place is huge. You know, and then the idea too, that being that here in Oregon, the whole body cam stuff is kind of behind in the times.
Oh, yeah. Still so behind.
Getting written or recorded consent about searching a vehicle, that's another big one. Because again, people's panic. And of course, I know there's people that are like, well, if you don't have nothing to hide, coolie high.
You've
also seen a lot of videos of things being planted.
Yeah, precisely. So,
you know, just wanted to say that.
Wow.
But this was huge. It was a big moment. Shout out to the Transforming Justice Coalition, all the organizations
that
were a part of this, community-based organization. So it's not like it was just, you know, some people sit behind a desk pushing the paper. These are people really out here on the front lines of things that pulled this together and got this win in Oregon.
So explain this to me. Like, the bill is passed. Are these things law immediately? Like, what are the steps in this?
So at this point, now that it's been voted on, it's made it through all of the steps in terms of the votes on the Senate floor, the House floor. It's made it through Ways and Means, which is set up for funding. So if something needs money or there's money involved, it goes to Ways and Means. And then the Senate floor, House floor, now it makes it to the governor's desk. And so pre-COVID, you would have the governor with a big pen.
Yeah.
And then the organization would be there like, we did it, thumbs up, pictures and all that. Now it may be a little bit different, but no matter what, here shortly, we're just waiting on the signature to happen.
That's dope. And
then that is law.
That's dope. I'm really excited to hear about all of the updates included in this bill. But that money being set aside for community-based organizations to assist communities of color is very, very dope.
Yes.
That's necessary. And I can imagine that there was some pushback that, you know,
which was actually
that's pretty racist, right?
Mm-hmm. And that's where one of the things that, you know, I had thought about and actually was for our platform in the space of culturally specific, because culturally specific does not mean it's blocking out other, it's specific, not
exclusive or, in,
exactly. Yeah. And so the fact that, yes, there's language and so on that is meant, that doesn't mean anyone can't be a part of this. The same way that there's been a lot of things, meaning our education and everything else, therapy and all this stuff that has been set for a specific culture.
Right. Right. Wow.
And that's why a lot of these things don't apply or work for so many of the other cultures that exist in this place. So being that this is a setup for it can still work and people can come and be a part of it, but it is a focus on people who have this racial equity lens when they are providing these services or organizations that operate from a space where they're able to see through this racial equity lens. That's which is not every place. So
that is super fresh. Man, appreciate the work you guys have been doing, man.
Yes, yes, Lord.
Serious business. This is why you ain't been in the club. I understand. You need your sleep. That's why you're not out in the block. I get it. I get it. It's cool. You know, you're still serving the community. I'm about it. I'm
about it. On opposite ends of the... Full
circle, baby. But hey, 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 I know some of y'all are excited to get back out in these streets. March 12th is a new date for Oregon to lift the indoor masking requirements. You know, for
the future, mask off.
Mask off, mask off. So Governor Kate Brown on Monday announced the current mask requirements will expire at 11:59 p.m. March 11th. Citing decreasing cases, hospitalizations, and strategic alignment with Washington and California as the reasons for speeding up the timeline, saying residents must learn to live with the virus while maintaining vigilance going forward. As has been made clear time and time again over the last 2 years, COVID-19 does not stop at state borders or county lines. On the West Coast, our communities and economies are linked together. As we continue to recover from the Omicron surge, we will build resiliency and prepare for the next variant and next pandemic. Mm. That's real talk, because there will be a next and a next.
Yes.
Although Oregon is lifting statewide mask mandates, local county governments and school district boards still have the option to continue requiring masks after March 11th. Masks will no longer be required on school buses unless a local district or health agency decides otherwise. State epidemiologist Dr. Dean Seidlinger said on Monday. So far, schools in the Portland metro area have not indicated that masks will be required. At least five districts, Tigard, Tualatin, Hillsboro, North Clackamas, West Lynn, Wilsonville, and Forest Grove, have indicated that masking will be voluntary. Decisions have not yet been announced for Portland, Beaverton, Lake Oswego, Gresham Barlow, or David Douglas. When asked if there was a risk of entire classrooms having to quarantine after lifting of the mask mandate, Department of Education Director Colt Gill says schools now have an abundance of tests available, as well as new guidance from the Center of Disease Control and Prevention on contact tracing and quarantining. His department will release new state guidelines for schools on Wednesday. Individual businesses, employers, and other organizations in Oregon similarly have the option of requiring masks after March 11th. Healthcare settings such as hospitals and nursing homes will continue to require masks after March 11th, at least until cases decline further. Last week, Seidlinger said that when the state lifts its mask requirements, he still recommends people at higher risk of severe complications of COVID-19 to wear masks. That includes Oregonians who are unvaccinated or are immunocompromised, have health conditions such as heart disease or diabetes, people who are 65 years or older, or Oregonians who share a household with higher risk residents. The federal government will require people to cover up on public transportation, including transit systems, such as TriMet and airplanes and airports. That federal requirement will expire March 18th, but President Biden has the option of extending it. With the current trajectory, hospitals could fall to low pre-Omicron levels by next week, Seidlinger said. Meanwhile, the CDC on Friday put out long-awaited revised guidelines for when Americans should don masks. The CDC says people in areas with low COVID-19 case rates and hospitalizations can forego masks. But people at high risk or serious illness in medium areas should consult a healthcare professional about how they should proceed. People in high areas should wear masks indoors when with people they don't live with, and that includes in schools. As of last week, the CDC categorized all of the Portland metro area and Marion County as medium. Much of the central and southern part of the state, including Deschutes, Douglas, Jackson, and Lane counties, were high. So, you masking off? What you doing?
When I said, like, I am keeping the amount of relaxed jaw and this overbite to be able to navigate the world hanging, it just, I found comfort.
Yeah.
Like, straight up, I've found a certain level of comfort with the mask in the spaces.
Yeah.
And maybe now because of like coming across the latest set of masks that actually I can breathe a bit and my face don't get too sweaty, I'm fine.
Yeah
That's what I've even in the scares through this time, because being in close contact and then having to take the test and be dodging there's still this element. Even it's no different than if somebody had the flu before, then I'm not getting jiggy.
Yeah.
Even pre all of this, if you're sick, then I'm still like, oh,
stay over there.
Yeah, we're not getting jiggy. But if there's, I'm not going to say no different, because there are different complications that come from this, but that understanding that it's not like this is something visible, right? So any space you're in, somebody sneezing, somebody coughing, and you happening to get, you catching some of that wind, you know, there's that possibility.
Yeah.
I think that in the last couple of years of figuring out what was happening with this, and as we've been covering this through this time, we've watched this information shift.
Of course.
Quite a few times.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We even think about what was happening just 3 months ago.
Yeah. With the distance being changed.
Yeah. And so capturing this, but for me, it's, there's still this element of, I'm a late adopter to most things. Right. Mm-hmm. And so
you don't get the PS5s right off the release date.
And I feel like it's gonna be the same thing with, once the mask mandates lift, I'm definitely gonna be that person that people are gonna be looking at like, why do you have that on?
You know you're free.
It's like, oh no, I've been free in my soul. But also, you can see how much fun I'm having under this mask.
You can see what I'm doing with my mouth.
I mean, and again, there will be a point where it, I feel like there's going to be a point eventually where I'll get to that space, or at least feel more confident as far as moving around, in general. But off the rip, no.
Yeah.
It just still feels too conspiracy can kicks in with it. It just feels too sudden.
It does. And I feel like there's some factors that aren't being properly taken into account.
Mm-hmm.
So the numbers have gone down, which is cool. Contributing factors to that could definitely be the fact that we have reached what has been previously discussed as herd immunity, where the majority of people have had it. We also are looking at situations now where testing is readily available and people are testing at home and not reporting results. And then you also just have people that are lying about being vaccinated.
Just outside.
Just period. Just outside, running amok.
A lot of hock and loogies.
Yeah. So, like, like for me, yeah, I'm definitely on my, you know, KN95 flow. Got them Jones in black at the office for everybody, you know. Any number staff, if you're listening, definitely make sure you come by and pick up 4 masks. get your little rotation going. And I'm masking from here on out moving forward. I'm just masking up. Will.i.am dropped a mean mask. That joint is dope. It's crazy. It got 2 HEPA filters built into it. It's real sleek. 2 HEPA filters built into it and earbuds. What? You know I'm copying.
Which, there's also a level of having a mask on that lets you kind of blend in, which I guess now it's going to make you stand out a bit more. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
in the space of, especially with me having the haircut that happened a few months ago.
Oh, yeah. Like 6 months
now. The amount of people that I see give me the, and it's like, is that not, because they ain't seen me in person without the hair. So they're not for sure. So it allows me to navigate. Throw the hoodie on and I got a hat on and a mask on. It's like
somebody else.
I'm basically invisible.
You're a whole different person. And no, that's Stan. That's Stan over.
That's Stan.
Oh man.
Well, we got a judge ordering Ethan Crumley to stay in jail until his trial. A judge on Tuesday ordered Ethan Crumley to stay in jail pending the outcome of his murder case, and in doing so, disclosed new details about the Oxford school shooting suspect. In his opinion, Oakland County Circuit Judge Kwame Rowe noted that he reviewed text messages and journal entries by Ethan that showed the teenager had made Molotov cocktails and contemplated that he, quote, may use the Molotov cocktails during the school shooting. Wild. In his journal, Ethan also wrote that he had once started a small fire in the woods and that he killed 8 baby birds by slowly torturing them. Well, that's a check off the list of
this stuff. Michael Myers, bro.
Yes. Yeah. The judge wrote, noting that he also saw a video of Ethan torturing a baby bird to death. Rowe wrote that these quotes prior delinquent acts are of grave concerns to this court. These factors, among others, help convince Rowe that Ethan should remain in the Oakland County Jail despite pleas from his lawyers that he be moved to Children's Village, a juvenile detention center in Pontiac. In his decision, Judge Rowe said, quote, this court cannot find that the juvenile would be safely detained at Children's Village, and continued, it is clear that Children's Village is incapable of safely housing this defendant because of the unique circumstances this case presents. Rowe reached this decision following the heated court hearings during which prosecutors portrayed the 15-year-old as a calculated killer who belongs in jail, while his lawyers argued the teen suffers from severe mental illness and needs therapy, which he allegedly never got. Ethan Crumley is facing terrorism and first-degree murder charges for the deaths of 4 students who were killed in the November 30th shooting at Oxford High School. 6 students and a teacher were injured in the massacre, many of whom are still struggling to recover from life-altering injuries. The defense has argued that adult jail is no place for Ethan and that his mental health is suffering as the teenager is locked up in isolation. Well, buddy, who cares? The judge, though, didn't buy it, noting in his ruling that Ethan had been actively communicating with members of the public several times a day. The judge was referring to numerous emails that Ethan has been receiving in jail from people all over the world since his arrest. The judge cited one email on January 16, 2022, when the email tells an individual that he is in adult jail, writing, I got a cell to myself, 3 meals a day, a TV to watch, and the guards are pretty nice.
Wow.
There is nothing in the email exchanges that causes this court concern regarding Ethan's current mental health. He's eating, reading books, playing video games, and talking to others. Prosecutors say Ethan used a gun that his parents had purchased for him 4 days prior to the November 30th shooting as an early Christmas present. The parents, Jennifer and James Crumley, are facing involuntary manslaughter charges for their alleged roles in the incident. I want to know how often the defense is used for Black and brown Americans of mental health issues. I just never see that as part of the defense.
Successfully executed?
Yeah. But it's amazing how that often makes it to the front of.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
The pages and the stories of, of the others.
You know what? Shout out to all the homies that are doing abolition work. I have yet to do the research and the readings to understand where a person like Ethan should be, if not in jail, especially during a time like this with the behavior that he's exhibited. Shout out to the judge for not falling for the okey-doke.
Yeah.
His parents, though, like, I am continuously surprised. Like, what manner of parent are you? One, where you're copping guns for the young youth, and you're just completely, like, you're missing all of this. Like, all of it.
Yeah. And I feel like as a parent. Video of him
torturing her bird?
Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, as a parent, let's be real, right?
Mm-hmm.
There might be a level of sneaking around in doing things that your parents are not aware of, right?
Yeah.
But your parents know what type of person you are generally.
Yeah.
That's, you know, if your child is like, okay, they're on the scope of, they could be into some weirdness.
Yeah.
That stuff is not hidden.
No.
If you're a parent. You're an active parent dealing with your child.
I mean, they exchange text messages with them talking about, LOL, you got to get better at this so you don't get caught. And then when he got arrested, they dipped. Like, they're indicating what type of parents they are. Their actions,
awareness volume. Was there.
Yeah.
So that's where we see, I'm glad that these, I'm not going to say glad, let me not use that. Mm-hmm. But this idea that there's some type of accountability being pushed towards the parents.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure that this wasn't a left field thing. And you bought this man.
Yeah.
Again?
Yeah.
Or a boy. Again?
Yeah. No, that's just nah.
Mm-mm. And I bet at least $100 that he has said F you mom and slammed his door at least once in his life.
Yeah. And once a month. Yeah. Yeah. Like, this sounds like Sid from Toy Story. Like, bruh.
Sid with the braces.
Yes. Straight up, B. Mm-mm. No.
Wild. And then Molotovs, though?
Bruh. Okay. All right. I'm so glad you mentioned that before we moved on. The young youth, I can't remember what grade he's in, but you making Molotovs? Like, and you were going to bring them to school? Like, what are you playing? Call of Duty?
That's what so where my mind went to was James Bond 007.
Right.
GoldenEye.
GoldenEye. Yeah.
GoldenEye. That's where my brain went to when I saw that. It was like, oh, little Molotov, they're going to have to run out. They're going to run out because of fire. And then.
You go ham. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's. Boy. Yeah, it's disturbing, B. That's disturbing. We have to stay on top of this story as it develops.
Yeah.
Straight up. But back here, home in Portland, a settlement from Precision Cast Parts air pollution case could average around $3,500 per household in parts of Southeast Portland. Mm-hmm. Precision Cast Parts has agreed to pay $22.5 million to settle a class action lawsuit that alleged its metal casting facility in Southeast Portland has polluted nearby homes with toxic metals.
Oh, you in Southeast?
Yeah.
You're trying to get that $3,500.
It's $3,500 per household. The settlement includes millions of dollars Precision Cast Parts already spent to improve emission control at its large parts campus on Southeast Harney Drive, plus $12.5 million in payments to people living in the area and their lawyers. Matthew Prusch, an attorney representing neighbors, said it's the largest environmental class action settlement in Oregon history. He estimates payments could average around $3,500 per household for people who were living in the area in February 2016, the time frame specified in the litigation. That's before I moved out here. I got no play. All right. Plaintiffs and neighbors reached a settlement last summer. Multnomah County Circuit Court Judge Tom Ryan gave preliminary approval in February. Attorneys expect checks will begin going out sometime this summer. Mm. People eligible for the settlement live in areas where scientists found pollution in 2016. That area is roughly concentrated around Portland's Brentwood, Darlington neighborhood, but it does not include the entire neighborhood and extends somewhat further to the south and to the west. The original lawsuit cited reporting in the Oregonian and Oregon Live about elevated levels of nickel in moss near Precision Castparts facility. The suit alleges that toxins found by the U.S. Forest Service researchers and state environmental regulators in tree moss nearby indicated that residents have been exposed to potentially harmful contaminants. Case administrators will notify people they believe are eligible. But residents and former residents can also check their eligibility online and view details of the case at structuralsettlement.com. People seeking a payment must file a claim form, also available online by April 9th. Those who want to exclude themselves from the settlement or object to its terms also must do so by April 9th.
Why would somebody want to exclude object? Themselves?
I don't know why they want to exclude themselves, but I can see them objecting because they want more money.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. 500 won't cut it. I need 15 racks.
Run it up, sir.
Run it up. We need to.
So I want to say, too, for the structuralsettlement.com, because that's crazy. That's the name that they use.
Right.
Because there's to say structurals plural and then settlement right after is wild. So just for anybody looking to look that up.
Yes.
STRUCTURASSETTLEMENT.com.
Yes. Structuralsettlement.com.
Yes. Where I was you can like, go get your check. Yikes. I'd have been mad because that would have been taking me to a something error. And then like, structural settlement, that's what he said. Yeah, he said it right.
You signed up for some spam real quick. Because you know that's probably a site sitting there, sitting somewhere.
Look.
To catch people, man, information.
People are so shiesty.
Yeah, yeah.
People really do. But I definitely hope that people do hop on if you were in that area or were in that area at that time, because they owe you some monies. And what's wild is that that Precision Cast Parts is somewhere my old company name shall remain not said got things fabricated at.
Oh wow. Yeah. Wow. I wonder how to determine the amount. Like, I mean, $3,500, what does that cover, you know? Yeah. Per person, per resident.
And also in the space of like air pollution,
yeah,
how do you stop? Do you say this street
that's
not where it ended. Huh. And how does it spread out? It's just like those are, I do wonder how they determine those factors.
Yeah.
Where it's included.
I'm curious about that too.
Man. Yeah.
You know, well, we're not scientists, so, you know. You know.
For the people out there, make sure you all check in with us every Monday at 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. as we sit down and run up the numbers.
Hmm. Run Up the Numbers, hosted by Ken Jones and DJ Ambush. Music by C's.
Picky, picky, picky. You know what time it is. Order for 50.
Put a whole lot of scritch on that scratch, sir. A lot of
scritch on that scratch.